Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast from the Early Morning Late Show. And welcome to the Early Morning Late Show, now with gluten-free options. It is 4 minutes after the hour, and it is Friday, January the 5th. Hope you have a nice weekend planned. It's remaining chilly around here in the Upper Midwest, probably everywhere across the Upper Midwest, as far as Hartford as well, and to all of our friends in Bismarck, who I know had some really cold weather. Way to hang in there. So did you know that during your lifetime, you'll eat about 60,000 pounds of food? That's the weight of about six elephants. As an aside, most of that will be consumed at state fairs. But I was looking at the most Googled words of 2017, and I was going over them thinking, yeah, I Googled that one. Yep, I Googled that one. So I think the number one was DACA. Of course, that's deferred action for childhood arrivals. Another one is Bitcoin. Another is, what is a solar eclipse? What is Antifa? What is net neutrality? What is Covfefe? I bet everyone Googled that one. What is anti-Kathura mechanism? That's some ancient analog astronomical computer that was used more than two centuries ago to track planetary positions and predict lunar and solar eclipses. I did not Google that. What is a fidget spinner? I did not Google that. What is the Paris Climate Agreement? I probably did Google that. What is a hurricane? I didn't need to Google that one. But there are so many different categories of hurricanes that inflict damage. And with Hurricane Harvey in Texas and Hurricane Irma in Florida and Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico, it was a big year for hurricanes. So a lot of people were Googling that. So those are some words that people Googled in 2017. I wonder what some of the words will be in 2018. We'll have to wait and find out. It's 6 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break, and Chris Martin's up next.
I couldn't sleep at all last night. Just thinking of you. Maybe things weren't right. When I was tossing and
good morning. It's 7 minutes after the hour. Chris Martin is the founder of themillennialevangelical.com, also works at Lifeway Research, and a regular contributor to the show. Good morning, Chris, and Happy New Year.
Good morning. Happy New Year to you.
Yeah. So I don't want to start with something quite so dramatic as this Logan Paul YouTube controversy. So let's just ease into it a little bit, and let me just ask you how your holidays were, and then we'll get into the Logan Paul.
Sure. Yeah. Holidays were great. My wife and I, you know, we live outside Nashville, Tennessee, but we're both from Northeast Indiana. So a few days before Christmas, we traveled home to Indiana, spent about a week at home, came back shortly before the new year, and then spent the rest of our holiday break hanging out at home and just kind of relaxing and enjoying a little bit of time off from work together. So holiday was great to spend time with family and friends back home in Indiana, and then great to just have some time to relax around the house too. So, yeah. But you know, those 2 weeks, you know, kind of like the last 2 weeks of December every year, I work part of the time, but also just kind of take off part of the time. And it's really the only like 2 week span of the year I allow myself to be kind of creatively lazy. Like I try to read as little as possible on the internet. I try to write as little as possible. I just kind of put everything on pause, and then it's nice, you know, it's a nice 2 weeks, but by the end of it, like around New Year's Day, I'm chomping at the bit to get back feeling productive again. So
yeah. And did the puppy go with you to Indiana?
He did. He did. Oh, he loves riding in the car. So
I bet he does. Yeah. All right. Let's talk about this controversy over Logan Paul. And I know it's under fire for posting a video of Japan's suicide forest. I know this is very controversial and very difficult subject. So I appreciate you dealing with this.
Yeah, for sure. So Logan Paul, it's, you know, a lot of people listening may not know who Logan Paul is. So let's talk a little bit about who Logan Paul is and his brother Jake Paul, and then we'll get into the actual controversy. So Logan and Jake Paul are two brothers, ages 22, Logan, and 20, Jake. They're from just outside of Cleveland, Ohio. They gained social media fame on the now-defunct app Vine, which was an app owned by Twitter, created by the creators of Twitter, which allowed you to post like six-second videos. It was popular for a long time, popular among young people. A lot of comedy sketches were done, and just like people would find creative ways to create 6-second videos. And they became very popular on there toward the end of their high school and beginning of their college lives. And instead of, you know, I think Logan went to college for a little bit, Jake maybe didn't, but when they got famous enough, they moved to Los Angeles, which is kind of like the YouTube / Vine capital of the world. They moved to Los Angeles in 2014 and started being professional social media creators, which before you laugh at that, before anybody laughs at that, they make between $1 and $2 million, probably closer to $2 million a month just from YouTube video ad revenue alone.
Wow.
A few months ago, Logan had about 300 million views in 1 month on his YouTube channel, and Jake, his younger brother, had about 500 million views on his YouTube channel, which translates to two-ish million dollars probably for each of them, not to mention they sell what has to be millions, if not at least close to that, of dollars in merchandise, you know, clothing, backpacks, all kinds of stuff. They primarily address a preteen or teenage audience. Imagine the kind of people that would be following after a sort of One Direction or Justin Bieber group, but it's not like they're only creating content for girls. Obviously, they're attractive young men, so girls are going to be attracted to them, like a Justin Bieber kind of situation. But guys really like them too, so it kind of crosses the gender divide in a way that maybe the boy bands of the past didn't. But they are the social media equivalent of the boy band craze. I mean, that is the best way that I could describe them.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're two of the most famous YouTubers in the world right now. 2017 really belonged to them on YouTube. And really, even though they can be kind of edgy and raw, and they curse sometimes in their videos, but they bleep it out, they are considered some of the more family-friendly of the most popular YouTube creators. YouTube has deemed them more family-friendly than a lot of their other top creators, because YouTube's notoriously kind of an edgy, raw platform. And so when you bleep out your curse words and don't do a lot of other explicit things, you're deemed family-friendly as far as relative to the platform goes. And so Logan and Jake Paul are kind of golden boys of YouTube. Well, on the last day of 2017, December 31st, Logan Paul had been visiting Japan, and it's a common trend. It's this sort of like thing that YouTubers do when they go to Japan. They go to the Japanese quote unquote suicide forest, which is Aokigahara. I don't speak Japanese, so I'm sure I butchered that, but it's a forest right at the foot of Mount Fuji that's known for in Japan is like basically if you walk into the forest, you don't plan on walking out. That people kill themselves there, unfortunately. And so YouTubers go there and they record sort of like horror video vlogs, like a Blair Witch Project effect kind of idea. They never really intend to find a dead body, at least they don't say they do or whatever. No one has done what Logan Paul did before. They do it more for like a horror sort of effect. And so Logan Paul said that he went there to do the same thing. Never intended to find a dead body. He got more than he bargained for. He did come across a dead body. And instead of turning the cameras off, dealing with the situation, and then perhaps reflecting on what happened in a later video, in a sort of somber kind of here's what we experienced video, he and his merry band of vlogging friends continued recording, approached the body, got very close, recorded up close, blurred out face and kind of like the, you know, what happened to the guy, but showed his hands, his feet, I mean, the lower half of the guy's body. And then included, a blurred out version of the body in the thumbnail of the video, like the preview image of the video on YouTube. So that they knew that that's the common place where YouTubers put their most, you know, edgiest click inducing scene of their video, mm-hmm. is in the thumbnail. And so Logan Paul and or his editor knew that it was the sauciest scene of the vlog. It's not like they were trying to hide it. And so they posted it. It was on YouTube for a number of hours, maybe 12 hours, I'm not really sure. But it got 6 million views, 500,000 likes, and was the number one trending video on YouTube. The problem is it violates – well, there are a number of problems, but it violates YouTube's terms of service. Yet somehow YouTube actually never took it down. When it finally did come off of YouTube, Logan Paul is the one that took it down. And he said in his first apology statement that he didn't expect the quote-unquote monsoon of negativity that followed, and that's why he took it down. So Logan Paul did not take it down because he saw a problem with it. Logan Paul took it down because he was getting an incredible amount of negative feedback and decided, oh, this is bad. I need to take it down. So Logan Paul's sort of moral compass regarding his video was determined by how well the video was received. So that's like, I guess, a little bit of an explainer about what happened and who Jake and Logan Paul are. I think the video itself reveals a lot, not only about Logan Paul, Jake Paul, the whole culture of YouTube, and that's a deep, complicated subject. But also I think it reveals a lot about us and our thirst for amusement in a 21st century sort of social media world.
Mm-hmm. And just the people who want to break into that business that are willing to really do kind of any kind of shocking things to get views and to try to be that next sensation or to try to get noticed. People are pretty desperate for becoming that next person.
I mean, it's kind of a vicious cycle. You have to be shocking. You have to push the limits. You know, Logan and Jake Paul are brothers. They seem to like each other to some extent, but they are super competitive. And sometimes I wonder if they genuinely do like each other or not, because Wow. they're competing for the same audience.
Yeah,
they're going after the same audience. They have published diss track, like rap songs, dissing each other and things like that. So they're competing with each other for market share of this preteen to teenage audience. The thing is, here's the kicker, kind of. Logan Paul's not going to be put out of business by this misstep. He's said he's not going to vlog for a while. He's taking some time to reflect, which is both smart for him personally and also as a sort of PR move. He needs to just leave for a little while.
Yeah.
But I mean, the video was viewed over 6 million times and got 500,000 likes before Logan took it down. In large part, Logan's fans don't care that he messed up.
Right.
They're mostly kids who don't understand why using a dead body as a prop is a problem. They've said, I've seen, who did Logan hurt? The guy was already dead. I mean,
Let's go to break and then continue this conversation. This is really weighty. It's 17 minutes after the hour. I'm speaking to Chris Martin. I'll be back in just a minute. It's 20 minutes after the hour. I'm speaking to Chris Martin, the millennialevangelical.com. Lifeway Research friend and regular contributor to the Early Morning Late Show. Chris, I find this disturbing that so many viewers viewed this so quickly and they don't seem to have any problem with, it's a dead body. Maybe the entertainment business has just gotten us that calloused. What's the difference between a dead body in a movie and a dead body for real?
Right, exactly. There's a book that was written in the 1980s called Amusing Ourselves to Death, which was the most influential book, one of the most influential books in my life I've ever read, and definitely the best book I read in 2017. It was written in the 1980s. Neil Postman is the author. He's written a number of other works that people may have heard of, but Amusing Ourselves to Death was published in the 1980s, and it focuses on how television as a medium made everything show business, from politics to religion. He talks a lot about televangelists and things like that. The book's over 20 years old, but his insight on television, I think, can be almost directly transferred to our age of social media. Here are a few quotes I included in my post that I think can be applied to the situation we were just describing, and are kind of, I mean, very prophetic. And the guy was not talking about social media. Anytime in these quotes that I mentioned social media, he actually used the word television, but you'll see how applicable they are. He said, social media, in other words, is transforming our culture into one vast arena for show business. For the message of social media as a metaphor is not only that all the world is a stage, but that the stage is located in Las Vegas, Nevada. The YouTube screen itself, instead of the television screen, the YouTube screen itself has a strong bias toward a psychology of secularism. This is one that I thought was really important, especially in regard to the Logan Paul situation. Those who would be gods refashion themselves into images the viewers would have them be. Logan Paul is a social media lowercase g god. He is a dominating force in social media and YouTube culture. And he refashions himself into the image his viewers would want him to be. I mean, it was so clear in his first apology statement, which was riddled with problems, that he did not see a problem with his video until his audience told him that it was a problem. And so, you know, in our social media, in our entertainment culture, a lot of times the creators, the entertainers, let their moral compass and their understanding of what is right and wrong be determined by what is popular or not popular. Postman goes on, and again, talking about television, I've repurposed it for social media. He said, but social media is a speed of light medium, a present-centered medium. He says, social media, as I've implied earlier, serves us most usefully when presenting junk entertainment. And this is key for, again, this Logan Paul situation. It serves us most ill when it co-opts serious modes of discourse and then turns them into entertainment packages. You know, I want to take Logan Paul at his word that he wasn't just creating this video to get views and to get attention and for shock value. I want to give him the benefit of the doubt there. His past actions don't really merit giving him the benefit of the doubt. Let's assume that he had good motives here. Regardless, the fact that he has come to a point where he thinks that you can use actual video of a real dead body as a means of accurately and effectively trying to prevent people from committing suicide is warped. I mean, that just shows how we think that this sort of entertainment culture can somehow carry more weight than it actually is meant to carry. And so I could keep reading quotes. I'm not going to, but if you want to, you know, have a kind of open your eyes to kind of what's going on and how we may be amusing ourselves to death in social media, in this social media world. But also, I mean, you know, Postman was talking about television. Pick up Amusing Ourselves to Death. It's a really important work, and I think it has a lot of insight, not only into kind of this most recent manifestation through the Logan Paul controversy, but also just like I wrote in the post, like I did not write this post to trash Logan Paul. There are plenty of people trashing Logan Paul whose opinion he cares much more about. I don't care about trashing Logan Paul as much as I care about saying Logan Paul's controversy this past week is just the latest manifestation of a much more multifaceted, deeper disease that I think is really infiltrating all of culture.
You know, then I think of people like Kathy Griffin, who thinks she's going to, you know, get a laugh out of a severed head of the Donald Trump. And you go, well, that cost her a career.
Right. Right. Yeah. You don't a lot of times we get so caught up and honestly, you know, there's a lot of responsibility, a lot of the, I guess you could say blame goes on the creators like that, right? I mean, you say, well, you know, it's their own fault that they did this. They pushed the boundary. The problem is, we as consumers are just as much to blame. The only reason they feel comfortable pushing the boundary is because in the past, their viewers have shown that they're okay with it as long as it doesn't hurt their beliefs or opinions or whatever. I said later in the post that Jake and Logan Paul aren't going away. And that means only one thing. They'll continue to push the limits of what is acceptable. They have to in order to survive on the platform. I mean, in the social media world especially, which is a much more here's the thing. This gets into politics kind of, but more just like government and bureaucracy. There's no FCC regulations for social media, right? So like Jake and Logan Paul are constantly promoting their merchandise to minors in very manipulative ways, like telling them to they released Christmas music videos around 12 days of Christmas and stuff like that, pushing their own, like basically they're like 3-minute advertisements for their merchandise, their like branded merchandise, telling them to tell their parents if if they open clothes on Christmas that aren't their merchandise, that they don't want those clothes, that they want to return them, and that they want Logan or Jake Paul merchandise instead. That they're literally doing this. And
wow.
That would not be allowed on television. That's like, I think, is illegal. You're not allowed to manipulate children through television advertising. Laws were passed about that, I think, in the 1980s because of how people were advertising to kids during morning cartoons. The problem is, as of right now, those rules don't apply to YouTube. And showing a dead body on YouTube is not against – it's against YouTube rules, but they never even took down the video. They said it was against their own rules, and they featured it number one on trending. So I think between this, the Facebook Russian ad controversy, and I'm sure other controversies that will come this year, I think we're going to see soon the FCC or some sort of other government entity is going to be pressured – by legislators or by people, maybe people like me, to step in and say, hey, look, we have to regulate this stuff somehow, because YouTube and other social media platforms are effectively the new television.
Yeah.
And a lot of the rules that you've put in place on television need to be extended to YouTube and similar platforms. And they're not right now. And it's just kind of a wild, wild west.
Chris, thanks so much for being on the show. Great conversation, as always. Have a great day.
Sure. Yeah, you too, man.
Thanks. Chris Martin, the Millennial Evangelical. We'll take a short break and be back with Breakpoint in just a minute. Good morning. It's 27 minutes until the top of the hour. Take a little break for news, and then we're going to talk to Brett McCracken. He's a journalist and author and pastor. He's at senior editor at the Gospel Coalition. Be back in a minute.
Think about the last time you opened your son's or daughter's report card. Do you remember how you responded to their academic performance? Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Whether you saw straight A's, C's, D's, or F's, you had a choice in that moment about how to value your teen. See, grades are important, but we can't forget that marks don't determine a child's value. And while it's important to do well, it shouldn't overshadow our relationship. My challenge to you is to look at the next report card, take a deep breath, then encourage your child. Help them work hard at school, but be sure that they know you love them no matter what, whether A's or F's or anything in between.
Learn how to navigate your child's turbulent teen years with Mark Gregson's free course. Get instant access by visiting freeparentingcourse.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the show. My next guest is Brett McCracken. He's a writer and journalist based in Southern California. So I already have a reason to not like him, because he's warm and I'm cold. He's a graduate of Wheaton College and UCLA, but the fact he's getting up this early to speak to me means a whole lot. Good morning, Brett.
Good morning, Bill. Thanks for having me.
So, Al, really nice of you to get up so early. I'm so intrigued with your book. the book is a fascinating read, and you've written a book on being uncomfortable. The whole thing is...
Mm-hmm.
And you make a premise, which is really interesting, and you argue that believers who accept the uncomfortable and even the awkward aspects of Christianity in the context of the local church, well, those churches are going to be the ones that are going to grow most significantly and advance the gospel most powerfully. So I'm real curious how you came to this conclusion.
Yeah, you know, I think part of it was my own personal experience with churches. I've grown up around the church, and I found myself in my own Christian life, I think, becoming too comfortable and just kind of going to churches that were full of people that were just like me, and where it kind of perfectly fit my tastes and preferences. And I just didn't see myself growing that much in those contexts. But in the last few years, I've been going to a church, my wife and I, that is very stretching for us, to say the least. It's very uncomfortable at times because it's very different from what we're used to. And And yet we've, as hard as it's been and as awkward and uncomfortable as it's been, we've grown a ton by going to this church. And so it just dawned on me that, you know, this is kind of a truism of life in general, that we grow most when we're stretched outside of our comfort zones. And it's true of our spiritual lives too, with church. And so I just wanted to write a book challenging Christians to get out of your comfort zones and actually lean in and embrace the parts of Christianity and the parts of the local church that are hard and difficult and uncomfortable, and you might see yourself grow as a result.
Yeah, Brett, why do you think Christians are always, I shouldn't say always, but a lot of Christians I talk to are always, they're looking for the next dream church. They're trying to find their dream church.
Yeah.
Maybe they had an experience with one when they were younger, and that's what they reflect on, and they're so nostalgic about that. If I could just find that church again, I'd be so happy going back to church.
Right. Yeah, you know, I start the book off describing my dream church in great detail, like down to like the types of donuts I would want and like the architecture and like every little thing.
Yeah.
And I do that just to kind of illustrate that this is kind of how we're wired in a consumeristic society. Like, we're told that we should kind of desire the perfect fit for us, with everything from, you know, the type of jeans you want to the type of whatever, a car that you want. Like, it's all about finding that perfect fit for you. This is just how, this is the air we breathe. This is consumerism. And so naturally it's kind of infiltrated the way we think about church. And so we often do approach church as consumers, right? We even use that phrase church shopping to describe when we're looking for a new church. We say, oh yeah, we're just shopping around for a new church. And so, yeah, I mean, it's just kind of how we're wired to look for that dream. But you know, the fact is, you're never going to find it. And the nature of consumerism is that you're chronically unsatisfied. There's always something better. The grass is always greener. You know, even once you arrive at a church that seems like the perfect church for you, like eventually something's going to change, either at the church or with you, and it's not going to be the perfect fit anymore. And you're going to be unsatisfied and left to kind of start the search over again. And I just think that that's a bad approach to faith and to the Christian life. A better approach, I think, is to just land somewhere and commit to a community, knowing that it's not going to be perfect. It's not going to be always easy. It's going to be challenging. But the commitment and staying rooted somewhere over the long haul, I think, is where we'll really see growth.
Mm-hmm. There's been, over the last couple of decades, a lot of emphasis on being seeker sensitive, and so I guess we want to be cool, and we want to attract people and not turn them off. And so can churches actually thrive and deliver the solid gospel and the difficult aspects of Christianity rather than focusing on being cool?
That's what I'm arguing. You know, my first book was called Hipster Christianity, and it was all about this whole obsession with cool that we have as churches and the kind of faulty obsession with relevance. And, you know, what's relevant about Christianity is not our, you know, pastor's skinny jeans or, you know, the size of his beards or tattoos or whatever. Like, the relevance of Christianity is Jesus and the gospel and the things about it that don't change with the current trends and the current zeitgeist. And so I think for any church or for any like pastor, the better approach is always going to be to be faithful to the Bible, to be faithful to what Jesus wants from his church, and not to care as much. You know, we need to care a little bit, but not to be obsessed with like, what is the current culture, you know, need to hear, or what are the current trends saying we should do or be. And yeah, so the seeker-sensitive movement, unfortunately, has put the emphasis on, you know, the audience and what are the current fads and trends and what do people want the church to be, rather than what is the gospel and what is the message that has always been true and we need to keep faithfully preaching to people in whatever context we're in.
Do you think, Brett, that there's way more distractions in churches today? I mean, that would give people reason to be more readily turned off, or do you think I'm out in left field here?
No, I think you're right. You know, we live in the age of like the smartphone, right? Where all of us are we're constantly distracted by dings and notifications and so many different things at our fingertips. And so naturally, I think we're going to take that mentality of the smartphone and like apply it to church. Like if a church isn't kind of instantly meeting my needs and giving me kind of added value to my life, like our mentality in the smartphone era is, well, there's another app for that. There's another, you know, answer for what I need, and I'll just look for it elsewhere. I think we have a really low patience level in our culture today. We're so fast and efficient, and basically if you don't get what you're looking for, like the answer you're looking for by Google in like 5 seconds, like you get frustrated.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think that's naturally going to, you know, lead us when we look at churches to be kind of impatient with, well, like maybe I visited this church for 2 weeks and it's not doing it for me. So I'm going to quit and I'm going to look for another church, and maybe that'll be the right fit for me.
Yeah.
But
I'm
I think we just need a longer view of Christianity. We need to take a bigger picture view. Because again, we don't grow in these short term bursts. We grow over long terms, and you can't do that being fidgety and kind of consumeristic about it.
That's true. I'm talking to Brett McCracken. We'll take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue to discuss his book, Uncomfortable, in just a minute. It's 11 minutes until the top of the hour. I have on our studio line, Brett McCracken has written number of books. The one we're talking about today is Uncomfortable, and how we have turned church shopping into consumerism. And maybe what we need to do is stay put and be uncomfortable. Brett, at your book launch party, you did a survey of like 40 things that you got from friends. That was hilarious, by the way. I think I'll just direct our listeners to go to brettmccracken.com, and you'll find that list there. It's pretty entertaining. Do you have a favorite one or two out of that?
You know, I'm more of an introvert, so anything on the list having to do with like praying in groups or like someone, like the whole thing where people lay hands on you when they're praying for you, and like their hands are sweaty and their breath is bad and they're praying like super close to your face, like that's super uncomfortable for me. Yeah. I think one of the things on the list that I would agree is uncomfortable is when bands, like worship bands, play an old hymn, but they do it in like a super jazzed up kind of contemporary version, and it just totally ruins like the beauty of the original hymn. I'm a fan of old hymns. So
yeah, I am too.
I don't love that. But.
Yeah. So number 13 is when a 3-minute song becomes an 8-minute song because the worship leader thinks they've achieved a Hey Jude moment.
Right. Yeah. A lot. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot with worship music that I think we could talk about, because everyone has experiences in church of the music just kind of not quite doing it for you or not quite being your favorite style. I mean, one of the things that is uncomfortable that maybe I think might be on the list is when you think that the song is ending, like it's been like 10 times already through the chorus, and it's like seems to be dying down, but then they just rev back up again, and it's another 5 minutes, and you know, another 10 times through the chorus.
So in your research for the book Uncomfortable, I know you talked to a number of pastors about what their own congregations would find most uncomfortable about Christianity. What were some of the common themes that you learned?
It was interesting because all of them were in different places, different contexts, and they all had different things that were most uncomfortable in their context. You know, some of them talked about diversity is the most uncomfortable challenge for their church in their context. Some of them talked about like different beliefs about Christianity were the hardest. I think a pastor in London talked about that, how the beliefs about sexual ethics, especially in his context in London, really is an uncomfortable truth for people. And I talk about that in the book. Trying to think what else. There were just a lot of different things. Someone said tithing, you know, just something as simple as asking to give money is an uncomfortable thing. I think any pastor would agree that, you know, that's not a comfortable thing to do, but it's a biblical thing to do. So, yeah, I mean, so the point of that and the point of the book really is just show there's a lot of things about Christianity that are uncomfortable, and we just need to accept that and be okay with that.
Yeah. So, Brett, let's just say Sunday rolls around and I want to go to my church, which, you know, is kind of a nice safe haven with people I love and people I love being around. And I realize, yeah, kind of comfortable here. Is that a bad thing?
Right. You know, I think it's probably good to kind of audit your life and ask yourself that question. Like, is my Christianity too comfortable? Because I don't think it's necessarily a good thing. You know, I think when we get too comfortable in our faith, it just kind of, I think, numbs us a little bit to the actual call of what Jesus is calling us to do. You know, he didn't call us to a life of comfort. He called us to a costly discipleship of taking up our own crosses and living lives of sacrifice. And when we live in comfort, I think we can forget the real kind of core of Christianity. So, yeah, I do think it's problematic if you go to church and you just look around and you see, like, oh, everyone around me looks like me, talks like me, believes like me. Nothing that is ever said at this church challenges me or stretches me. You know, I don't leave on a Sunday ever feeling provoked or pushed or stretched. I don't think about church during the week. You know, all of those are signs that are maybe not good signs, that maybe your faith is a little too comfortable. And I think also when we're too comfortable, we don't cry out to Jesus. We don't lean on Jesus like we need to. We just kind of become self-sufficient. And why would we need Jesus? Like, if everything is comfortable and is easy in our Christianity, it's almost like Jesus becomes irrelevant. But when we're living in a way that we're truly embracing the cost of discipleship and the difficult, uncomfortable parts of following Jesus, I think we grow a deeper intimacy with him, and we're forced to not rely on ourselves as much, and we're forced to rely on him, but also on our community, and learn to depend on one another in community, because we can't do it on our own, because it's too difficult on our own. And I think that's a good thing.
Yeah. Well, Brett, you're a thoughtful and gifted writer, and this is intriguing material, and it's very challenging. And, you know, nobody really likes to be uncomfortable, but you've put it in such a way that makes it a great read. And I encourage our listeners to check it out.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Bill.
Yeah. Well, have a great new year, and congratulations on the book.
Thank you so much, and you too.
You bet. Yep, that was Brett McCracken. You might want to go to his website, brettmccracken.com, McCracken. We'll take a short break and wrap up the show. Special thanks to Brett McCracken, his book, Uncomfortable. Talks about the uncomfortable cross. What does it look like to embrace suffering and sacrifice? The uncomfortable truths, uncomfortable love, uncomfortable mission, uncomfortable diversity, and uncomfortable worship. Boy, that pretty much sums up a lot of the feelings most Christians have today at churches. There is something that you're struggling with. Might be a good book to check out. I have enjoyed being back today. I was sick a couple of days with that cold and flu, so that was no fun. Where you spend more time laying down than you are being upright. And you spend so much time kind of sleeping and coming in and out of sleep that you realize you start to forget the important things in life. Like, where are my car keys and who won the 1976 World Series? And then when you start feeling better, you realize, well, they're in the last jacket I wore and the Cincinnati Reds. So you start to feel like you start to feel better and you start to make sense again, which is nice. If you're suffering with the cold and flu, you have my complete sympathy. It is no fun. Take good care of yourself and stay warm. This weekend's going to be chilly in the upper Midwest. Thanks so much for listening. I love all my listeners. Have a great weekend. I'll see you Monday.
Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show. Connecting.